Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tobacco Wars Radio Show. And I'm excited to welcome to the program Jim Rumford. Jim, how are you? And, you know, I'm just glad to talk to you again. And I've been getting a lot of great feedback on the Total Media Network about how great your stories are and your great history. I appreciate you calling.
Oh, good talking to you, Neil. Everything's fine. This is something I grew up with. So I've been around it all my life. Ever since a little kid, growing up on tobacco farms in Bratton County, Kentucky. But there's a long history of tobacco. You know, tobacco has been around for a long, long time. It was the pharaohs had tobacco back in those years. So it's nothing new, although it seems like it's new, but it's been here for a long time. But some of the things in this country that happened, there was a fellow by the name of John Ruff, R-O-L-F. And he grew tobacco in the Jamestown settlements in the early colonies. You know, Jamestown was an area where Captain John Smith had his event with the folks. And when they founded Jamestown, they said, okay, this is going to be a communal operation. Everyone's going to work and raise crops, and we're going to put it in the storehouse, and then we can take from the storehouse as we need it. Well, he quickly found out that by doing that, half the people would work and half wouldn't work. So that's socialism at its finest. So what he did is he broke up the commune, and then he gave plots of land to everyone, and they were on their own to grow their own food and make their own way, which started capitalism and entrepreneurship. That was kind of a neat story of another topic.
That's interesting. You talk about back to the pharaoh days. People, there's a bad connotation with tobacco. In so many ways, and we don't know how long it's been out there. So why did it take so long to find out the effects? And it's the nicotine, right? It's not as much of the tobacco. It's the nicotine that's killing people.
No, it's not.
It's not?
That's not killing people. The chemicals that's been added to tobacco by the tobacco companies and by spraying tobacco instead of hoeing it, suckering it, topping it, they use chemicals for all that. That's what's killing the people. Wow. These chemicals are deadly. They add chemicals to the tobacco processing. I think the first one they used was ammonia.
Yeah. Okay. So it's almost
and the idea was they had these chemicals so it would help deliver the nicotine into the organs and the lungs so that you could get higher quicker and you would get addicted. So that's if you look back 100 years ago. You did not have nearly the amount of health issues then as you have now. And there's more people smoking back then. So it's the chemicals that's in the product that's creating the health hazards. It's killing people.
Let's go back to the time you said of the pharaoh. So what were they using tobacco for when it first came out, when people really started using it?
Well, all through century, they use it for snuffing, smoking, chewing, and all the things that they use it for today. The use hasn't changed much, but they also use it as money. And so money was a byproduct of tobacco. They used tobacco leaves as money. And of course, when they got a lot of tobacco leaves out there, then the money became worthless, just like the dollars. We put all these dollars out today, and the Continental dollar was used in the American Revolution. And the more they printed those dollars, the less valuable they became because they were getting away from gold. And so when you flood the market with anything, dollars, tobacco, corn, the price will go down. And that's why you have crops that's pretty well governed by a group or a government. But know that the tobacco became toxic after the grower, after the manufacturers injected their chemicals. And there was a movie about this from Benson and Hedges down in Louisville, Kentucky years ago. And one of the key guys there blew the whistle on them. And they were the main ones. It's Benson and Hedges. They were the main ones that was injecting chemicals into the tobacco to get people hooked. Now this is taking another turn. What happens with the sugary Coke people, Coke and Pepsi and all those guys making pop, they've injected things in there that get people addicted to their products. So addiction becomes, it's not just tobacco, but it can be alcohol, it can be Cokes, Pepsi, sodas, what have you. So addiction is a big problem. You get people addicted and they can't quit. I smoked cigarettes for 13 years as a kid, and it almost killed me to quit. I was pretty well hooked on it. But that was even before the big onslaught of chemicals induced into the product.
Wow. So let's talk about when you were growing up, that tobacco. So there was no chemicals in it. So what was the difference? The farmers were really pretty much manufactured before it became go to the factory and stuff, right?
The farmers did it, but without chemicals. So you would have to cultivate it. You'd have to hoe it by hand as the plants got bigger. You'd have to sucker it because the shoots coming out would take away the nutrients from the ground. And you'd have to top the flower on top, and then you have to worm it. So you go down the field, and there'd be tobacco worms on the plant. You'd have to take it by hand and crush them in your hand and kill those guys. So it was constant work in the tobacco patch to get it ready for market. But back in those 40s and 50s, it was pretty well clean tobacco. But not today. And they've done all kinds of things to enhance the deal. Except there was a couple of guys that became kind of did some dirty tricks on the tobacco people in Kentucky and Tennessee and the Carolinas. They took the method of growing tobacco down to Brazil. And so Brazil started growing white burley tobacco, flue cure tobacco. And so that eroded a lot of the market in America. And so this is before the government got out of the support program. And so that was kind of dirty tricks on the guys that went down there and did that. But down there, they could grow a lot of tobacco, and they'd be selling that worldwide just like we were. So
wow. Yeah, so it's very interesting. So like when they started manufacturing, so you think, let's just say that the didn't go to manufacturers, that to put those horrible, harsh chemicals in. Do you think that there would be as many deaths related to cigarettes?
Back then?
Yeah.
No, percentage-wise, no. But see, back then, you had 50, 60, 70% of the population were smoking. And if you could look at some old magazines, Chesterfield was doctor-approved. If you would smoke Chesterfield cigarettes, it would expand your lung capacity. And you could have better health. Well, this was all nonsense because what they were doing is just a marketing program to sell cigarettes. And it worked. Because if you go back in 1950, 1960, 65% of the population smoked. Now, today, you got about 13% of the population that smokes cigarettes. Other things have taken over, like drugs, marijuana. That's replaced a lot of the cigarette smokers. So it's interesting on how this thing has all evolved from where it started years ago.
Well, yeah, it's, but how upset, why couldn't people that really loved smoke and loved to use tobacco didn't get upset and say, we got to create something now that is back to the days when you grew up, so that it could be safe and that people can enjoy it, that like to smoke, like to chew, like to use tobacco in some sort of way?
Well, today you got the you got the vaping now, which is very, very dangerous. I think vaping is more dangerous than cigarettes. My cousin's son used to work for a vaping company out in Phoenix. And he was with them about 18 months, had all kinds of stock options, and really a very good situation. And he saw the damage that would do. And so he left his company. So said goodbye because of the hazards. And the hazards are pretty stiff on vaping. You're better off to smoke than you are to vape. But the smoking is, they're both very, very dangerous and very, very bad. But the cigarettes have taken a tumble over the past, say, 20, 30 years. The people kept trying to quit and trying to quit, and now it's down to 13% of the population as of I think, a year or two, and it keeps dropping. But John Ruff, when he grew the tobacco, he shipped a small quantity of that to England in about 1613. And that kind of was a hit over there. They kind of liked it. And he got his seeds from the Spanish colonies, Trinidad and Caracas. And that's where he started in America growing tobacco. In about 1616, 2,300 pounds were shipped over to England. 1620, about 40,000 pounds were sold. And so this started the export of tobacco out of America to Europe. With that poundage over there, of course, the king wanted his money. So he put a tax on all this, the tobacco that came into England at the time. So that's kind of how the taxes started, because tobacco became a cash crop. And in fact, it even helped anchor the American Revolution with tax money.
That's so crazy. Wow. So it was a very, it was one of the most valuable things when you talked about the history before with bartering, to then becoming a cash crop and really changing the way our economy works with bringing tobacco over, it sounds like.
It did. It was a good cash crop. The colonies were having trouble with money, as we all know from the days of George Washington and the 13 colonies. But they produced some good money. Some of this stuff, if you look at the time, well, this is like the late 1800s and into the 1900s. Tobacco was selling for 20, 24 cents a pound, or $24 a hundred. And that was a lot of money. I mean, if you drive through Kentucky, Tennessee, and the Carolinas, you can see some very large, beautiful mansion houses that were built on tobacco. And raising it then and shipping it out made those guys a lot of money.
It definitely did. So we're at about the 1600s in history. The taxes started. Where did it go from there?
Well, it kept the people that got involved in it, like in the after the Civil War. Well, this is before the Civil War. They started raising white burley. White burley was raised in the bluegrass area of Kentucky. Flue-cured tobacco was grown in the western part of Kentucky and Tennessee. So as you go into, let's go back to 1690. The growers came up with their own crops, and they wanted to control how much was on the market. If you had a lot of tobacco placed on the market, they had to destroy it. Excuse me, got a frog in my throat. They would destroy excess amounts of tobacco to keep the price up. And then over a period of time, they started setting up quotas. But in Bracken County, well, one more thing. There was a 1 cent tax on tobacco provided the earliest funding of the College of William and Mary. So if you look at the history of this, colleges, universities, the states all reap benefits from tobacco by taxing it. So it's very much part of our history in the 16, 17, 1800s. So that's what makes it such a beautiful story. And what people went through to raise it. The tobacco wars came along, created a lot of problems. Bracken County became a very big part of the white burley tobacco growing event. There was a lot of tobacco wars in Bracken County, where they would bring people out and they'd horsewhip them, as we talked before, burn down their tobacco barns, destroy the crops. But those stories were pretty dominant. But let's get back to the history a little bit more.
Okay, that sounds great, Jim. I think everyone is really intrigued. I'm learning so much from just talking to you about it that I had no idea about tobacco because it's really not in the history books. They want to kind of eliminate it because they think of it as a something that's dangerous and evil versus, well, there was a history and people made a living with this before it became hazardous and dangerous.
Well, a lot of farmers, that's the only cash crop they had. But back in the day, that you had your farm, you had your milk cows, you had your crops, your gardens, and people were pretty well self-sufficient. I remember on our farm back in the 40s, we slaughter a pig and slaughter a cow for food through the winter. And my grandparents would set up a beautiful garden, had, you know, tomatoes and green beans and had anything you wanted. So they were very self-sufficient. Some were doing well, and of course, as it is today, some were doing well and some weren't. But be self-sufficient then, and then to sell your tobacco at market, that's the cash money that you had that got you through the year. Now, for an example, in Bracken County, Kentucky, at one time, I don't know if I told you this or not, we had a Ford dealership that sold tractors and trucks and cars. We had a Ferguson dealership that sold tractors. We had a Pontiac dealership, a Chevrolet dealership, and a Chrysler dealership. Now, imagine this. Bracken County at the time only had 5,000 people in the whole county. And the little town of Brooksville, Kentucky, had a population of 650 people. And they were able to support all those dealerships. And they had grocery stores, they had clothing stores. So it was a prosperous area, and tobacco is what led the way.
Wow. Almost like the steel industry in Pittsburgh and in certain cities. That this was it. This was what really kept people thriving, was this industry.
It was. And Bracken County or Brooksville, Kentucky is not the only ones that did this. If you go all through Kentucky, Tennessee, Carolinas, Virginia, you had many, many small counties, small towns that survived on tobacco. And that's what gave them their cash crops. So it's very, very hardworking, knowledgeable people of that era. So
it seems like it. Definitely hardworking people. And that's so almost that kind of attitude is what that area. So kind of give us an example of when tobacco kind of disappeared as really a huge manufacturing type of thing with farms, how it hurt the communities historically.
Well, yeah. Now, if you go back to Brooksville, Kentucky or Bracken County today, the only thing left is the Ford dealership and Kubota tractor sales company. But all the car dealerships are gone. So a lot of the storefronts are gone. So how that helped prosper the county and the city is the tobacco, which is pretty much non-existent. Now, they came in some years ago. They used to have an allotment of how many acres you could grow on tobacco. Well, as time came through and chemicals become pretty dominant in the tobacco patch, the poundage on an acre of tobacco would go up. It would be very prosperous for the farmer. So the government came along, or the agency that took care of the tobacco crop, they changed it from the acreage to the poundage. So now you can grow 10,000 pounds of tobacco, or 5,000, or even 100,000 pounds of tobacco. It depends on what your allotment was. And this has been passed down from acreage to poundage. So then the government decided to get out from under the price supports of the tobacco. So they offered the farmer $10 a pound for his tobacco allotment, which meant if you grew 100,000 pounds of tobacco, the government would pay you $1 million, but you would get $100,000 a year for 10 years. If you grew 10,000 pounds of tobacco, that's $100,000. You got $10,000 a year for 10 years. Then after that was done, if you're going to raise tobacco, you have to sell it directly to the processing companies themselves. And the government stepped out of the support. And so that was when tobacco was going down as far as a lot of sales. And so that's how the, now today, if you go into these counties that's raised tobacco, they're responsible to sell to the tobacco producer. And so that whole industry has dropped in support. Now, to replace that crop, now Kentucky last year legalized hemp to be grown in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a big industry, except with the coronavirus probably slowed things down a bit. But the,
sure did.
This is going to be gigantic, and this is the next tobacco, wouldn't you say? Hemp and you know, and the marijuana legalization down the line.
Yes, it is. But now Ohio is about to legalize this. I think they're going to legalize hemp to grow next year. So more and more states are starting to move into the area of hemp. In hemp, you can't smoke it. It doesn't do anything for you, but it's used for clothing, paper, rope, commodity products. And so back in the day when it was legal, 85 years ago, hemp was grown for those products. And the chemical companies didn't like it. So the chemical companies would lobby Congress, and they finally got hemp outlawed, calling it a dangerous crop, which it wasn't. It was it was produced goods such as what I mentioned.
Right. Wow. It's an interesting history. Anything else to talk about today on about tobacco history? We can go to different decades, to be honest with you, on this program, and that's what's so great about the Tobacco Wars radio show, is that we go into many parts of history, and you've touched upon many different things. Anything else to add right now regarding the history that you would like to add today?
How much time you got?
We can add, well, that's another episode, Jim. The thing is, we don't have to do 5 hours. People could tune in, and they need to subscribe soon, as we're going to be creating a place for people to subscribe to just the Tobacco Wars radio show and all those different things. But anything else to add, Jim?
Well, the climax of the Tobacco Wars was in 1908. They stopped raising tobacco completely. They've tried to restrict the supply and increase the price. But then we come along to Teddy Roosevelt, who busted up the trust of all trusts and the Supreme Court. In 1911, they busted up the oil trust of Rockefeller and the tobacco trust on the same day, by the way. The tobacco trust with James Duke, better known as Buck Duke. And that's another story there. So there's many stories that can come out of this. So we just touched on a little bit of this. So I could, on the next show, I'll go into more detail about some more of the history on how the this whole thing came about.
Perfect. We'll definitely do that, Jim. And everyone needs to go to thetobaccowars.com to check out information, purchase your book, learn more about you. It's available on Amazon and all those different places. And the Tobacco Wars radio show is available all over the place, but ultimately at thetobaccowars.com. So I appreciate it, and all the different social media. You're being very active, Jim, and great conversation. Learned a heck of a lot. And people, if they want to learn more about Tobacco Wars, they need to contact you and see what topic you want to discuss, because there's so much to talk about in the history of tobacco and the Tobacco Wars. So I appreciate you calling.
Thank you very much, Neil. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was the Tobacco Wars radio show, everybody.